You're listening
to the CD Baby.
CD Baby.
CD Baby.
DIY.
Musician.
Musician podcast.
Hey there, and welcome to episode number 254 of the CD Baby DIY Musician Podcast, where we've got an episode full of listener feedback and questions, and we're going to go down a list of things you may have missed in the recent weeks and months that have passed recently. My name is Kevin Bruner, and joining me is Chris Robley. Chris, how are you doing?
Doing as well as can be expected in a pandemic where we're all quarantined. But I am, for anyone who's listened to the podcast for a long time, they may have heard me threaten to do a marathon 8-hour live stream broadcast, and the time is nigh. I'm finally going to do it next week.
Yes, you requested the day off from work so you could make it happen.
I did. I'm preparing. I've got some people designing like a festival poster, but instead of different acts, it's just going to keep being my name.
That's a good idea.
For eight different hour-long slots. And it's going to be a fundraiser. So disc-making friends at Disc Makers in New Jersey have basically converted their factory into what are they making? Face shields and other, you know, protective stuff for nurses and doctors. So I am going to use this, my live stream as a fundraiser to get funds to work with them and order face shields for frontline workers.
Excellent.
And you'll hear all sorts of silly cover songs and depressing originals and awkward banter, maybe a Harry Nilsson tribute.
Of course, Chris. You can't go 8 hours of playing music without throwing some of that in there.
Yeah, I got to fill a lot of time.
Are you going to take breaks? Are you going to do like clothes changes and set changes? Or what's the deal here?
I don't know. So, I mean, I got to take pee breaks, right? And I figure I can eat a perfect bar or something in there. Yeah, I don't know yet. What would you do? This is still in the works.
You could make it like you, because you said you were going to have different signs. You could make it where you have, it looks like the bill for a festival, like the day, and have a different persona that you have play for each hour.
Yeah, so I have to wear sunglasses in the daytime one, and then as it gets darker, I take them off. Yeah,
and change clothes, and you know, you can do it similar to what you did with your residency, where 1 hour you focus on this, 1 hour so you can let people know when they want to tune in.
Exactly. I will do that. So that's my life. How are you?
Doing well. Actually getting a lot of music recorded. We've actually gone into pretty much overdrive for us as far as getting new Small Town Poets songs written and recorded. We've been cranking them out pretty fast. And so that's been exciting. And, you know, I'm working in the same spot where all my music gear is, so it's easy to take a little break and put down some tracks or play some drums or do something. Mm-hmm. And so it feels like I'm definitely in the creative zone, which is good. So I'm trying to make the best of it. And in all of that, Chris, we do have some sad news that was probably inevitable, that people probably figured it out at this point. The Valencia conference is officially canceled. So if you were thinking of going to the DIY Musician Conference in Valencia, it is canceled. If you had purchased a ticket, you should have received an email from us. We are refunding everything. You don't have to worry about reaching out. We're automatically refunding it. And yes, that was a tough one.
That's a highlight of the year for sure. So we'll just have to pick the party back up in 2021.
Yeah, we're definitely planning on doing it in 2021. We've already talked to Berkeley, and they love doing this thing. So there's no concern about it not happening again, unless there's a global pandemic. You can't schedule those things, apparently. So at this point, you may be wondering, what about Austin? Well, we're still moving forward with Austin. At this point, you know, I'm assuming we'll be able to make it happen. And we're planning as if we will be there. So, you know, again, if you buy a ticket, we will make sure that if anything happens, that you will absolutely get a refund. But we may have to scale it back a bit just because, you know, there might be less of an appetite to travel, or it may be that crowd sizes are limited. We don't know yet. So some of those things are still some of the things that are up in the air. You know, as soon as we know something, we'll let people know. But as of right now, we're planning on moving forward. And it seems like August is the month where everyone is throwing their event now, because that feels like the window of time where it's a safe zone.
Right. Well, I think you were telling me the other day you knew some folks who had canceled a tour, rescheduled it, and then had now canceled the rescheduled tour and postponed it. What would that be, a second or third time? That was you that was telling me that story,
second
right?
time. Yeah. Yeah, I saw it. This was like early on. It was, you know, I think it was when I was like at the beginning of March when I was down in Phoenix. I saw them cancel. It was when we started talking about, oh, are we going to have to cancel Valencia? Oh, that's so far out. That's fine. But I saw somebody reschedule a tour to June. I was like, huh, people are already rescheduling stuff for June. It was a tour that was supposed to happen, like some of the shows that were happening in late March. And yeah, I saw them reschedule them again to September and October. So interesting times. We won't get into it much in this episode of the podcast, but I think there's an episode coming that we're gonna need to talk through what artists should do as things start opening up, because there's just going to be this crush of people trying to get shows, limited in number of venues. The number of venues didn't expand. Plus, some of them actually have probably gone out of business, unfortunately, during this. And so it's going to be this real interesting shift to get shows going again. And it's not going to be a turn the light switch back on. It's going to be a process. And I think navigating that's going to be important as artists and understanding how to approach things in the market when that happens. If you want to stay up to date on what's going on with the DIY Musician Conference in Austin, just, you know, follow the, you already listened to the podcast, follow CD Baby on social and make sure you're watching our blog and all that. But we'll let you know if anything changes, but we're planning to move forward. One piece of good news is that I've got some freebies for everyone who's listening right now. One really good freebie.
You're like Oprah.
Yeah, you get a free coupon. You get a free coupon. Since everyone's shifting all their promotion online, I have a coupon for all you podcast listeners for $10 towards an ad builder campaign through show.co. It's 10 bucks. The coupon is adbuilder10. Pretty straightforward. So if you don't have show.co or haven't used it yet, go to your CD Baby dashboard, click on the link, and it'll take you to show.co where you get a free account. You have to go through your CD Baby dashboard and then use that coupon and you can try out the Ad Builder platform. $10, free money.
So here's a question, just so you don't, so we don't mislead anyone. Did we reduce the minimums for people who use the coupon? Because isn't there, I thought there was a $20 ad minimum.
I think that was on audio ads.
Oh, okay. So then maybe, yeah, they don't need to spend another dime. Cool. Just wanted to make sure.
And if you have to spend 10 bucks, it's still 10 bucks.
It's free. 10 bucks. Yeah.
But I'm pretty sure that the minimum, Chris, now you have me second guessing myself.
Well, okay. So then we should just say, hey, use Ad Builder and you'll get $10 free in ad budget.
There we go. That's the message right there. There it is. We landed it. All right.
And you can get your audio ads on Spotify and our Heart Radio. You can get your banner ads on Pitchfork and Rolling Stone and, Billboard, really premium music sites.
I have some ads running right now. And
for your new single?
Yep. And I was pretty pleased with my banner ad design.
Did you use Canva?
No, I used Photoshop. I just did Photoshop. I should have used Canva, but they turned out nice. I think cool. They're very eye-catching. So, and they're running right now, and they're getting on some great websites. One thing that's worth mentioning is ad inventory is so cheap right now because there's so much volume on the web of traffic. You know, everyone's at home surfing the web, reading, you know, all sorts of sites and stuff. So there's just so much inventory and the prices are really affordable. So it's a good time to try it out. All right. Like I mentioned, this episode, we're going to be going through my short list of things you may have missed, and I'll explain where that came from in just a moment. Then we have some great listener feedback and emails and some phone calls, and it's going to be a good episode. So the idea of things you may have missed.
And one thing I missed is your notes of ideas. So I have no idea what you're about to say.
Part of this pertains to number one, but you know, well, I'll just hit the list and then I'll give my explanation afterwards. That way it'll be good. So things you may have missed, and I'm going to run it down as quickly as possible. Number one, the CD Baby retail store has officially closed. You need to change your links. If you've got links to the CD Baby store, you need to change those. And if you need all the details, go check out episode number 249, where Chris and I talk through in detail why that happened, why it's a good thing for artists. But it's been clear that there's a large grouping of people that didn't get the information, some of them a little bit on the angry side because of it. But that store is officially closed. Change your links. Listen to episode number 249 for all the details. So that's number one.
So do you want my comments from the peanut gallery as we go, or should I hold my tongue?
Let's just get through the list, and then we'll chat. Number two, you can get Amazon for Artists through CD Baby, and only through CD Baby. And it's actually really cool. I have now discovered the Small Town Poets fans. Amazon Music is the number two place they listen to music. Spotify's number one. Amazon Music has edged out Apple Music and is number two. Now, it's a number two with quite a gap between Spotify and Amazon. But looking at the data that they provide, it's like, interesting. And there's information about voice data and how people are engaging with your music. And I think it's a nice job. It still feels kind of like it's in beta. There's some quirks, but you may have missed that you get that exclusively for using CD Baby, and it's worth checking out. And also, you will miss that when you're signing up, there is a field that says company that is almost invisible. Everyone I've talked to misses it, and I did myself and spent like 10 minutes screaming why I couldn't get the submit button to work. There's a field that you have to put a name in for a company in order for the submit button to illuminate for you to connect on Amazon's side. So be sure you check out that app. That's something that's really cool. Also, number three, you probably have missed that you can get an official YouTube artist channel. And the link is on the CD Baby dashboard. And it's something that allows you to connect a lot of the activity around your artist on YouTube in one place. We have a bigger announcement coming, but we're still waiting for the go-ahead from YouTube, but it's on the dashboard. It's in the tools and promotion section. Check it out. It's something that's worth looking at right now when you have some downtime. Number four, you may have missed that publishing revenue is super important and it's growing in importance. And there is a date coming up. I don't have it in front of me, but John Baer, our VP of Creator Services here at CD Baby, was letting me know that there is a date coming up, I believe it's January 1, where if you haven't claimed back publishing revenue for streaming, it'll get paid out to major label artists. And you don't want that to happen. So CD Baby Pro will collect that for you. And it's something that, you know, some artists have been like, whatever. But it's something with our music, Small Town Poets, I've been seeing sizable amounts come in where I'm like, wow, that's actually worth making sure we're getting, because that's adding up. So you may have missed that publishing revenue is getting more important and you need to get in on that. Number five, using the Spotify for Artists tool before you release is super important. In our last episode, Chris mentioned the idea that people get confused with the release tool that they have in Spotify for Artists and the attempt that they made at doing direct distribution. Two separate things, but I will say that with the latest song that we released, using that tool, we got a huge bump from Release Radar. This is the first single we had out where they guaranteed that it would push to all your fans through Release Radar, and it made a significant difference. And if we hadn't used that tool, it would not push it to release radar. And we've also been seeing some bigger spikes from Discover Weekly. So planning your release is important. Allowing enough time between when you distribute to when your release date is so you can use that tool is super important. Don't miss that. Don't just go, oh, whatever, I'm in a hurry. Those things really add up. And when Spotify says, hey, if you do it this way, there's benefits, then just do it that way. Number six, you may have missed that Bandzoogle will give you an awesome website and you can sell commission-free, plus you still get free CD Baby submissions. So if you were using HostBaby or you just need a website, if you use Bandzoogle, you can sell directly from your website, commission-free, and you get CD Baby submissions. We're partnering with Bandzoogle, and we don't want you to miss out on that because they have some amazing tools that are better than what we had in the web department, and you can still get free CD Baby distribution through them. I've got two more. Number seven, show.co is free from your dashboard. I mentioned at the top of the show, but don't miss out on that. Everyone's focusing on promoting music online. Show.co is a tool that you get for free using CD Baby. Even if you haven't distributed through us, just go create an account. You can still get it free from the dashboard. And it has a lot of great tools that help you turn online activity into real fans. And don't miss out on that. And the last one I have is of things that you may have missed is that there are a lot of freebies going on right now. Things like I had someone from Roland email me saying, hey, you can get our Beats app for free now. It's a cool app that makes beats. I know Moog has a really great synth app that's free right now. Logic Pro X, I think is what it is. Apple has a free 90-day thing going of it. So there's lots of free stuff happening right now, and you don't want to miss that. But a lot of that's, you know, rolling out, and you can take advantage of that. So that's my list, Chris, of things you may have missed.
Okay, so I have one thing to say about using show.co. I published an article recently on the DIY Musician blog called something like How to Promote Your Music Online for Free During COVID-19 or something like that. But basically what it is a list of ideas that for ways you can use show.co to get a little bit more out of what you're probably already doing online now, sort of just out of necessity, because all of music promotion and marketing is online right now. And so if you're already live streaming, if you're already sharing links to videos and new songs and stuff like that, this is kind of like a list of ways that you can use show.co to kind of meet some secondary objectives. So for instance, if you're doing a live stream, sweet, here's how you can use show.co to also boost your Spotify following, or, you know, drive some streams or grow your email list at the same time as you're doing the live stream. So check that article out. And then to jump all the way back to the first point, first I realize we're all busy. Sometimes we don't see things. Sometimes we unsubscribe from newsletters we really shouldn't because it's still important and relevant to us. Things happen. Messages fall through the cracks. But what the hell, people? We did like multiple blog announcements, several emails to our list. We recorded an entire podcast episode about it.
It got an enormous amount of news in the music business press as well.
Right,
Variety covered it.
Yeah, so it was not only did we do everything we could to get the message out, was widely covered on the internet, and somehow still months later, with months of preparation and months of warning, people are still taken aback and pissed and feeling betrayed that they can no longer sell their CDs through us, which, by the way, is not true. This is the thing that really gets me. After all that, they're pissed and they still have the information wrong. You can still warehouse your CDs with us. We have a warehouse. We are fulfilling orders just like usual. When you run out of stock, we'll tell you we need more. All of that is the same, but for the fact that people are purchasing through Amazon and, you know, Alliance and local record stores and things like that. So the order is placed in a different location or whatever, e-commerce site, and we fulfill it just like usual. So anyways, that's me just griping about how, despite our best attempts.
Well, as I was telling somebody at CD Baby today, that even if I had 20 people in a room, and I experienced this because our team is almost that big, and I say, hey, I've got something to tell all of you that's very important. And I say it, and then I restate it, and then I restate it again. There will still be one or two people that didn't get the message. And it's fascinating when, you know, it's something in marketing and communications that it's just fascinating to see that it's really hard to sometimes get people to stop, listen, and comprehend. And, you know, even when you send an email out, like getting a 25% open rate is amazing. That means 75% of the people still didn't read it. Yeah, the store is closed. It's hard for snarky Kevin to not make an appearance. That's partly why when I was saying why this episode came out. I'm like, how do you miss this stuff? And, you know, knowing that when you were saying we're still doing physical distribution, absolutely true. And not only that, the majority of our sales, pushing towards 95% of the sales we had for CDs was through Amazon and Alliance. So it wasn't through our store. So you're not really losing that because it really wasn't our store. Now, for some people that had mentioned, well, I was selling downloads and we do give you more flexibility on downloads. Our download experience was terrible. For your users, it was a terrible experience. Bandcamp is available and makes it so much better. If that's what you just want to be able to sell downloads with more flexibility, they have better options for that.
And Bandzoogle, you mentioned, they won't even
take it. Yeah, and Bandzoogle.
And you can do it there for free.
Yeah, Bandzoogle, you can do it commission free. And so there's just better options. And so when it came to us, like, because some people are like, I don't know if I can trust this company anymore. I'm like, came to us. What we want to do is be the place where people can fully monetize their musical assets. And there's certain things, like just like we decided it was best for us to step out of the web hosting business because that was sort of a distraction. We're not good at it. And it's not what we want. Our core business is built around. And Bandzoogle does it far better. So let's partner with them and let them do what they're good at. And let's focus in so we can be better at doing the things artists want us to do moving into the future.
Well, and so you said that the download experience was a bad experience for customers on cdbaby.com. But I would also think the same thing is true, that there's the same amount of friction when you as an artist decide to link someone to cdbaby.com to buy your CD. Suddenly, for your fan who isn't a musician, they don't know about music distribution, they don't know who CD Baby is, probably, if they're just purely a music listener. They click that link, they want to buy your CD, and now they're on a brand new site that they don't know, they're unfamiliar with, and they have to trust us and you along the way to enter in payment information into our system. Again, we've closed this down, so this is no longer an option, but prior to us retiring the store, that's a whole leap of faith they got to go through. Then, you know, like if you know anything about web marketing, every little hurdle you introduce, whether it's another button they have to click or, God forbid, they have to get out their credit card information again, is killing your conversions and your results. So now instead, you swap out your links, you link people to Amazon. Everyone's already on Amazon. They trust it. They don't have to do anything with their credit card information. It's stored. We've removed so many hurdles. And yet the end result is we're still doing the fulfilling. So you don't have to go to the post office, all this. So like, to me, I think it's, even on the physical side, it's creating a better experience for your fans.
Yeah.
And I bet if artists who are resistant to it simply swap out those links to Amazon, they'll actually see an uptick in sales.
Actually, the benefit of this, going back to why one of the things I said you may have missed getting Amazon Music for Artists, one of the cool things that's in that app is it tells you the number of fans, but then there's this other layer that it calls super fans. And those are people that are engaging with beyond just digital music, but buying physical goods as well. And so ideally, if they're heading in the direction I think they are going to build an ecosystem of music and merch in an environment where everyone already has their credit card there, that is so used to buying that it just becomes a seamless experience that has me really excited about what the future of music can be with what Amazon is doing compared to, you know, Spotify. It's like you're kind of wondering, well, what's next for Spotify? And it seems like they're grasping a lot of things with podcasts and other content. And
sure. And on Spotify, any merchandising to begin with is probably going to lead the person off platform, which Spotify doesn't want. And two, requires some kind of integration with another service that's going to handle the merchandising and the fulfillment and all this stuff. And so that makes it less likely to happen and less, you know, less incentive for them to develop it. But with Amazon, they have every reason in the world to want to send your, if you have a listener on Amazon Music, that's streaming your music. Yeah, they might have a great incentive to allow you to sort of build a bridge between that person and your physical product on the same platform.
Yeah. I think the benefit of what physical and digital on Amazon can do, there's alignment on what you want people to do there. You want people to buy physical goods and listen to digital music, and moving them from digital to physical is in Amazon's interest as well, where that's not the case on Spotify. And so that's why I think it's better. And for us with the CD Baby store, the store was just something that it's like, do we want to maintain this thing or do we want to get to things that artists asked us to make, like payment splits and all these other things that allow people to promote their music online and create a better distribution experience and also point towards the future of what monetizing is going to look like with things like lyrics, extended metadata, and all these things that are going to be more important. And so, you know, it's in order to move forward, sometimes you have to leave some things in the past.
Well, before we move forward out of snarky territory, I just have one last thing to say, which is sometimes you see complainers, or maybe not even call them complainers, just someone raising a fuss over something, some grievance they have. Now, in this case, what I have noticed is the people with the loudest grievance, when you look into their account, it's funny that they haven't really even taken advantage of this thing that they're now supposedly losing, meaning they don't really have CD sales anyways. And then I'm like, what are you complaining about? No one's bought a CD from you in 7 years.
Yeah. Well,
okay, I'm done with my snark now.
No. Well, here's the thing. Here's what makes me take a step back when, you know, when I see people upset. At first, you know, I would get like, but then I know people have a lot going on and things are stressful and the world feels uncertain. And then there's this thing that's been around for 20 some years that went away and I didn't know about it. What's going on? And I used to sell a lot of CDs there. And, you know, so there's a lot of attachment. There's a lot of things of like, that's where my last album that I released 3 years ago sold some stuff. But, you know, that's not necessarily what's going to happen when you release there again. Especially now that it's gone, but you know, so I get it. You know, there's feelings and emotions and, it just feels like, well, now what, that was kind of my go-to plan. And, so that kind of leads me into my next little segment here, and it's stuff not to miss in this moment. So, those were some items that I said you may have missed, some things that have rolled out. Another one I could add to the list is that your music is so much more global now with lots of outlets in China and Africa and India that we've added, but stuff not to miss. And this is the things that in this moment moving forward, while we're sort of stuck in this quarantine and coming out of that, because it's going to take a lot of time to get back to normal once things start loosening up. But number one, stuff not to miss. And this list is shorter, Chris, so we can chat about it in a second. Number one, assess what really was and wasn't working. I think one of the best things about pushing pause and stop on everything is that it becomes very obvious what was working and what made no difference at all. And it's a good moment to assess or just stop doing things because you've always done them. Number two, it's time to do all the web maintenance and things that you've been putting off and really start dialing that in so that when things are time for, you know, let's get moving, that you have that all together and you're not going, oh man, the booking agent is frantically booking shows now that they're open and I haven't updated anything. Don't make that mistake. Also, listen to our pitch episode because it's a good time to listen, you know, start thinking about how you might better represent yourself. Number three, write new music. Take this time to really focus on the creative process without any distractions. You can't go tour. You can't waste time trying to get shows just because that's what you've always done. And maybe they weren't even doing anything for you in the first place. Write new music. Get lots of music ready. Get in that creative mode, knowing that that's your lifeline right now. And the last one I had was like creating a release and promotional funnel. And I think you and I should do a whole episode of the podcast, maybe a couple episodes about, you know, you talked about using show.co in that article you wrote, that really dialing in, like, how am I getting fans from point A to point B and really focusing in on that to make sure that you have, whether it's a little funnel, just, you know, something small you're doing, or it's this big elaborate thing, you've got time to think about those things and really think about, how am I getting my fans from point A to point B? Am I just throwing stuff out there? How do I keep things moving forward? So that's this my list of like stuff not to miss in this moment.
Yeah, well, I like the, it seems like a few of those overlap in that. In this time where you're not gigging, you presumably have, yeah, some free time to do the web stuff and all that. But yeah, like I like looking forward and saying, you know, at some point the world is going to start spinning again. How can I make that a campaign or a new aspect of how I approach music making so that it's all related? It has a clear goal in mind. So you're not, yeah, like taking stabs in the dark at like, just doing things you think you should do as a musician, but like, because you're a little bit at a standstill now, you can look ahead and say, when I come out of this, I'm going to attack it, you know, like, yeah, I'm not explaining this very well, but I like what you're going for there.
Yeah. And I think it's really important for you to understand the what's happening in the industry. I mean, clearly everyone knows, oh, everything's on pause. There's no shows happening. But as things start to open up, or even right now, inundating a club booker with show requests is probably a waste of your time. Right now, those folks are probably more concerned about whether or not they're going to have a job. Because if the venue is closed for so long, maybe they get laid off. Maybe that person's not there anymore. Maybe there's going to be a big changeover in the people that are the contact person when things start opening up. Those are all things to consider. But also you want to make sure that you're thinking about the appropriate way to respond. And when things start to open up, I forwarded this to Chris because it made me laugh. Someone sent me an email pitching, you know, themselves to be a guest on the podcast. And they said the topic they thought would be a good one would be how to make the most of out of touring. And I was like, I got this yesterday. I'm like, really?
Talk to me in a year.
Really? I'm going to get somebody on the podcast right now to talk about how to make the most out of touring when zero people can tour? That's a bad pitch. So don't be the person making a bad pitch. I think what's important is the idea of like, you've stopped everything and assessing what worked and what was working, what wasn't. And it being okay to like, now that everything's stopped, I can cut out all the things I was just habitually doing because I kind of fell into the, oh, I guess we play shows or I guess we do this and forge a new path.
And when you get into that mode, it's like juggling. You can't, you know, while you're juggling, it's tough to assess, you know, what you could change about the process. You're doing everything you can to see the things that are in the air and catch them and throw them again. And so this is that chance to be like, maybe I shouldn't juggle knives. Maybe I should just.
That's dangerous.
Yeah, no, I don't know. Or no, but, or to kind of get ruthless with assessing what's working, what's not. Maybe it's time to not play live anymore. Maybe you've realized you've stopped playing. And you actually still have a connection with some audience through live streaming, or you're focusing on recording music for sync licensing, and that's feeling really rewarding. You know, whatever, you could have a revelation now that something you were doing, it's time to go away. Maybe you hate Twitter. Fine, get off Twitter. Like, make this the time to, yeah, trim the fat and make very, very deliberate, specific goals for what you want when you, you know, kind of move to the next phase.
Yeah, I found this image that was circulating. Actually, someone texted it to me. And if you follow me on socials, you saw it. But it said something like, I did the math, and after figuring out all the money lost from canceled shows, turns out I'm saving $214.
I've seen a lot of those memes. The one with the empty club that said, you know, before coronavirus, and then the empty club after. Yeah.
But the one that with the that I saved money made me laugh, because even, you know, the band Hello Morning I was in, that here in Portland playing the Portland scene, even when we were getting like a good gig, I think once we got a gig for $1,000. Most of the gigs we got, it was like probably with all the time and effort and expense, we were losing lots of money if you counted our time into that, and like gas and all this kind of thing. And so even with Small Town Poets, we don't play all that often. But when we do, we're just trying to break even, because, you know, we just want it to be an opportunity to get out in front of people and play. We're not trying to do a tour that's, you know, paying our bills. And so that really made me laugh. That for a lot of artists, that's probably true.
I'm sure. I mean, especially if they calculate it the way you were just saying, like where it's like preparation, getting to the gig, getting home, waiting around to sit through two other bands. Like, there's no way you're making minimum wage on most gigs after that gets split up amongst a 5-piece band.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's our list of things you may have missed. And we've got lots of emails and a call. And so during this time, if you've got suggestions for promoting music online or things you're trying, whether it's working or not working, we'd love to hear it. You can call our listener line at 360-524-2209, or you can email us at podcast@cdbabypodcast.com. And yeah, you might make it on the show. But we've got some great emails and a call this week, and some really good stuff. And really appreciate people taking the time and effort to share stories and things that are working for them. So let's dive into that.
All right.
Let's start with this first one. It's a little bit shorter because I know a couple of them are lengthy. Get a shorter one to get things rolling. All right, this is from Guy Smith. I have a hunch you guys have covered this question before, but I don't recall the answer. I released a couple of singles in the past months. I've also finished all the other songs for a new album, and I'm heading into the final production stages. Amazing how much studio time a pandemic creates. I intend to put those singles on the album, but fully expect that once I start twiddling with the project, I'll want to remix those singles. So, number one, would this create a unique ISRC, or should it? Would it be preferable to skip the remix, assuming it's mainly tweaking, and thus have only one ISRC, assuming that I can grab the single from the CD Baby archive and add it to the album? Can the new master for the single replace the old one, thus keep one ISRC? Anything else I need to worry about concerning this? If you've tweaked it enough that it's a remix, then it's a different master recording and a different ISRC. Wouldn't you agree, Chris?
Yeah. I think if someone listened to it and said, yeah, that sounds different to me, that seems like it needs a new ISRC. But if it's more like it's the same instruments and you just tweak some EQs and maybe there's a little bit of different volume kind of automation stuff, I bet he could get away with keeping the ISRC the same in that case. But
I will say this, when the singles that we released leading up to our album and then the album contained them, I used the same ISRC, like I mentioned. However, the single versions, I used an online mastering tool to master. The versions that are on the album were mastered by a mastering engineer. So there's some very slight differences. It's not a different mix. However, I know our operations guy at CD Baby would say, different master recording, no matter what, it's a different ISRC. The reason why people like who are handling the operations of distribution would come down hard on that is because fingerprinting technology is starting to be employed by these platforms to verify that a master recording is either identical or not. And part of the reason is they're trying to trim the fat of people like trying to game the system and fraudulently releasing tracks they don't own, like a Beyonce track it's put out there under a different name. They're using this technology to verify that master recordings are the same and make sure that they go to the right place or that they're different. That's one thing that it may cause problems in the future, but it depends on what you mean by remix. I know he's talking about just like tweaking. If it sounds different enough to you that you notice, I would say that's probably a different master recording. And as far as replacing the old one, you don't want to go into that territory because it makes a mess. And the reason it makes a mess is because, you know, if there was some urgent issue, we could help replace it, but it's only going to get replaced on maybe Spotify and Apple Music. We're not going to go to every digital outlet that many of you haven't heard of that your music gets sent to around the world and update that file.
Well, and another, also your song might've been put in playlists on Spotify. And even if it's a sort of the inferior version of the song that you think you improved upon and releasing the album later, like some people might've really liked it and added that to their playlist. Like don't make them wrong and suddenly remove that song that's getting some attention somehow.
It's hard as artists for us to just call things done if we still think, oh, I could tweak this and I still have time to adjust that knob. It's like at some point you need to be done.
I mean, that does address one other question he had, which was just work on your song. And when the song's done, put it out. And then later, if you include it on an album, I understand that it should probably be mastered again so that it fits on the overall album flow and volume and all that stuff. But otherwise, just call it done. Once you put it out as a single, like, that's the song. Don't do a different remix. Don't keep tweaking, because that's time you could spend just working on other songs.
Unless it's a special remix that's like to be an alternate version. That's what I would say.
Oh, yeah. That would be fine. I'm just talking about the endless tweaking that can happen when you're like, never calling something finished.
Correct. Thank you, Guy Smith, for that email. Let me read the next one. That's a quicker one. And then we'll go to a call and then we'll go to our longer emails because they're going to be more discussion around those. This is from Noah Tubbs. Hey there, big fan of the podcast. Very, very helpful in not just practical ways, but also in letting me know I'm not crazy. He said, I wanted to reach out after I listened to episode 246, where you guys discussed starting from the beginning in 2020. My band, Mid-Season, is in the middle of planning our first year as a band. We've been in different projects together along the years, but we are all at the point now where we have the tenacity and capability to pursue a full-time music career. However, our local scene is all but retired. We have a ton of house shows near us, but it's very difficult to gain audience attention, and the scene is mostly five or so bands that alternate on bills each week. My question is, how can we effectively stick out within this type of dynamic, and when is a good time to start touring? Thank you so much for your help and content, Noah. And this email did come in like this week or last week. So we'll discuss as if in a pre-coronavirus and post-coronavirus world, how to best answer just based on the scenario he referenced. So it sounds like when he said the scene is mostly retired, at first I wasn't sure if to read that like he's in an area of the country where there's mainly retirement communities. Entirely. But I think what he meant is that there's just not much of a scene. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
And but I can answer either way.
The same five bands over and over again at every gig, right?
Yeah. That is a challenge, and it's a challenge a lot of artists are in. One thing I would say is, one, make sure that you're not missing any opportunities to work with those other bands to build a scene. Sometimes that can be very beneficial if there's sort of this focus around this group of artists that are trying to become a collective to bring attention to something and do bigger and better things in a community that may not have shown a lot of interest. That's ways to, you know, work together and make something bigger and better happen. If you're really in a community, like if it is something like a retirement community area, like you're in an area of Florida where it's all retirement people that aren't going to come to your show, that's a challenge. That's where I'd probably move everything online as much as possible, or start looking at how we can play somewhere else and start doing some shows outside of our scene. Maybe, you know, looking for the bands that are similar in close cities that maybe have something good going on that you could offer to open for or do some things for in order to make that connection. But it is tough.
Yeah. One thing I would add to that is if it's either a small town or a small scene and there's only five bands, it's probably also a pretty limited, or you might think that there's a limited audience that you can draw from in your local town. And so what would happen is if you want to start touring and you introduce yourself to bands, you build relationships with other bands in other markets that you're going to open for, you probably want to reciprocate and have a show that you can offer them where they come to your town and open up for you. And but that also leaves you in the position of needing to draw more people to make it worth this other band's time. So that might mean playing less in your own town too. Like if that means you, instead of playing every month or every week, whatever, you play twice a year and you save up all that goodwill for the audience you can draw, or maybe again, like maybe multiple bands in your scene work together, two different bands, and you pool those fan bases so that when the out of town band comes through, it's worth their time again. So it might change how you look outward, basically might change how you treat playing in your own town, I guess is my summary.
Yeah. Well, and also if it's a small scene, I live in Southwest Washington, which really feels like the suburbs of Portland, Oregon, but Vancouver, Washington has its own downtown area. And for many years, there's was some bars that, you know, just felt like your local sort of divey bar that might have a band playing and nobody really cared. And so I'm kind of picturing that environment, like there's some places to play, but, you know, no one's really caring and whatever. My advice would be to do the opposite of what your tendencies are. And a tendency for artists in that situation is to show up, not care, put on a, you know, half-hearted show, not do anything special. And my advice would be to just have fun with it and do the exact opposite. Figure out how to make it super awesome and special and get so good at it that people are like, really top, man, this is the thing to do in town is to come see these guys play. And at minimum, if no one still shows up, you get good video of it and get creative with capturing whatever you're doing on video and use it on the web and take that energy and put it down different channels. Because at the end of the day, if you're showing up to a venue where nobody cares and you act like you don't care and just kind of half-heartedly playing the gig because it's the only thing you can get, it's not going to do anything good for you. And that's where you might as well just not play. All right. Let's get to that call. Let's see. Here it is. And it's somebody from Portland, Oregon.
Hey, Kevin and Chris. My name is Jackie. I'm a fellow Oregonian as well as you guys, and actually don't live too far from the CD Baby headquarters. So yeah, I've been kind of like a hobby singer musician for a while, but just started kind of like pursuing music and playing at live venues around town back in October. And then I released an EP in February, and I feel like I was making really great progress until quarantine came into effect, and which naturally caused my shows to be canceled. So I guess my question is, do you guys have any good tips on how to promote my music and the album while we're going through this period? I'm not particularly tech savvy, so I know that the obvious answer would be to have more of an online presence, but what specific tips do you guys have for me on that? I would really appreciate it. Love the show. I've been listening for a little while, and yeah, really appreciate the work you guys do. So thanks in advance. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Well, thanks for the call, Jackie. Chris, do you have any advice?
Oh, let's see. how to move things online when you have not that much online experience. Well, I would say this. What about spending time creating a really good video that you could use to do some advertising to audiences that don't know your music using Facebook and Instagram? And then for people who show some interest in that video, you kind of follow up by doing live streams once a week or whatever you can, you know, make a regular schedule of, so that you have a way of kind of still personalizing this experience that new audiences, or rather new listeners, can be brought into an experience that's more personal and kind of continuous. That would be my recommendation.
Yeah. One thing that I was reminded of today by somebody is that, you know, some people aren't good at live streams, or they don't, I don't know, maybe they're not comfortable doing it yet, or just doesn't feel like it's doing anything. Don't forget how powerful video is. Not everything has to be a live stream. It's funny that, you know, even artists that weren't touring, suddenly everything, our lives have just been inundated with live streams and Zoom calls and FaceTiming. And it's like, and it feels like almost overwhelming. And so don't forget that people love video, and they love it when they, you know, can go and select it. And when they're in the mode to, you know, mood to browse and don't feel like they have to be there at a certain time. Cover song videos still work amazingly well. And so don't forget things like that. It doesn't all have to be live. So music videos have high level engagement, like Chris said, are a great opportunity to use as ads, especially on Facebook. And coming soon to the ad builder, you can do that as well. Drop in a video and promote it. And so those things are opportunities where maybe just try recording some videos, some live ones with you playing. I'm assuming she's a singer-songwriter or somebody who can play by herself, not necessarily needing a band or something like that. But yeah, those are opportunities where you can still create content, engage with fans, and it doesn't have to be live. So you can take time to edit or make it a little bit more interesting and so forth. But, you know, with being a newer artist and feeling like your momentum was killed, I think trying to, you know, get people engaging with your music and discovering who you are is how I would think about everything. And like, especially if you're just in the Portland area, if you're doing a lot of advertising tests or trying to, you know, dip a toe in those waters, I'd say just focus on the Portland area. It'll be super cheap. And then you are focusing on the community that you're going to try and engage with as you start, as the, you know, opportunities to play shows open up again.
I got one other thing to add to it, and this might just add to the live streaming clutter you were groaning about earlier. But if you've already played, so she's at a place where she's kind of just starting playing live, right, and building an audience. But there are obviously a few venues where you have played, and I presume that means you either know a booking person there or the owner or whatever. What about reaching out to those people and doing a live stream from their Facebook pages? So there's some, you know, cross pollination of audiences. You're kind of doing them a favor. And then when the world starts spinning again, you'll be on their radar as someone who helped and cared about their business being shut down for a while. Just an idea. Not sure if that'll work, but.
Yeah, that's actually a good point. I have seen venues and concert promoters doing virtual shows, you know, live streams, but they've been hosting them in a way like from their page. So, you know, because the problem the venues have as well is they're trying to keep music fans engaged with their brand and their special way of curating music. And so you might look in your neighborhood, your community, and see who's doing those things and what opportunities might be there for that. If the venue has seemed pretty quiet during all of this, you know, it might be an indication that they're struggling. But if you've seen them pretty active on social media, it might be an opportunity like, hey, let's partner and do something. Or are there any opportunities to do a live stream? Are you guys planning any virtual tours or things like that? All right. Why don't you read the next email, Chris?
All right. So, hey guys, first of all, love the podcast. I've been listening for a few years now, and it's always super interesting and helpful. My name is Florentina, and I manage a Canadian artist named Adam Wendler, who is currently living in Germany, where I'm from. I just listened to your Corona episode the other day, and we actually have started a project inspired by the whole self-isolation situation that might be interesting to other artists as well. 2 weeks ago, we started playing balcony concerts by accident. Our balcony is facing a few other apartment buildings, and when Adam started jamming on the balcony one afternoon, all of a sudden, more and more neighbors started coming out onto their balconies, listening to the music, clapping, dancing, having a drink or a cigarette, just enjoying the music. So, we decided to start having these concerts weekly, every Friday evening, to kind of start the weekend off together with our neighbors. Cause, surprise, surprise, everybody is at home on... Oh, because, surprise, surprise, everybody is at home anyways. We've even made posters with our Instagram handle, at Adam Wendler, and hung them up on our balcony and all over the neighborhood. What is fascinating is that there hasn't been a single complaint. Usually Germans can be pretty grumpy, and they're not afraid to let you know if something annoys them. But so far, not a single neighbor has complained. It's the opposite, and we've even had people from a building across the street ask us if we could play for them as well. It's been awesome since it's led to a bunch of exposure. Neighbors are taking Instagram stories and tagging us, and a local newspaper wants to cover the project. We actually get to meet all our nice neighbors and make their day a bit better with some live music. It's led to a feeling of community, which is awesome in times like these. Now, I realize not everybody can do something like this. Maybe you don't have a balcony or neighbors that live close by, but I think it's a good example for making the best out of this weird situation we're in right now and to promote your music locally. You could also slip download codes to your music, sanitized, of course, into some mailboxes and make someone's day like that. I just think that now is the time to try stuff where you'd usually be like, can I do that? Because you absolutely can. Everybody is stuck inside and looking for excitement. You may as well give it to them. Anyways, hope this is helpful to some artists out there. Keep doing what you're doing. Cheers, Flo. I love that story.
It's a good one.
It's very uplifting.
Yeah, if you're somebody that lives in an apartment or condo complex, that's a good idea. And people are definitely looking for entertainment. They're looking for a change of pace, something that's breaks up the monotony of just sort of being stuck at home and I've watched everything on TV I care to watch and what am I going to do now? And someone's outside on a balcony playing, yeah, they're going to come out, have a drink, sit and listen and really enjoy it.
There's a bass player who lives in Boston named Zach Hickman or Hinkman. I forget what his Hickman, I think. And I saw some pictures. I didn't dig into it enough because I was busy at the time, but I think... So he's played with like Josh Ritter and Mark Arelli, and you know he's a full time musician. But apparently he also plays the sousaphone, because I think he put on his sousaphone and dressed up in some weird outfit and just was walking through his neighborhood like a solo sousaphone marching band to like brighten people's spirits. And he got on the local Boston news and made a kind of a similar story, just sort of a random bizarre. What do they call those? Like a flash mob of one almost.
Oh yeah.
just brightening people's days in the middle of this crazy time. I thought that was kind of a similar story.
Yeah, there's all sorts of things you can do with it. And you could go from being the spontaneous where it sounds like this started, where he's just like, hey, I'm just going to play on the balcony. And then people were enjoying it. And, you know, a lot of people saw the stuff that was happening in Italy where they were all on the balconies singing and having a good time. But it isn't all, you know, you could be spontaneous, or you could actually, you know, turn it into some cool social media content and stuff like that. But I would agree that the idea of can I do that is pretty much out the window, and you might as well try it.
I was going to point to that exact same phrase, because I think not only is there that lesson for this situation, like, can I do that? I absolutely can, and I'm going to do it now. I feel like you should have that attitude about everything all the time, regardless of pandemic or not. Like, when you're thinking about how to market yourself or market your music, then what you're staring at is five, you know, tried and true tested marketing campaigns that every other musician on the planet is doing. Maybe think of something else. and then be like, can I do that? And, you know, maybe the answer is no, but try it. Like, because because the asking the question and trying to do something that excites you and that feels different is probably going to resonate in the same way with other people. They're going to feel like it's more exciting than the same thing every other artist is doing. So I feel like that, can I do that, is such a good question to ask all the time. And then assuming it doesn't like eat up all your time or make you go broke, then the answer should be, yeah, I'm at least going to try it.
I thought being a musician was all about eating up all your time and going broke.
Yeah, that's true. All right. So can I do that? Sure. Go broke.
All right. We've got one more email, and it's got a lot of information about TikTok that I thought was valuable. This is from Daniel Cooper. I think that's how you pronounce his last name. It's spelled C-O-U-P-E-R. So, hey guys, as a high school teacher, I've been hearing about TikTok from my students for several months now. So when the recent episode dropped, I broke down and gave it a shot. I now have something like 16,000 followers, which wasn't really my intention and hasn't really paid off in any tangible ways, except that now I have a new addiction and 6 take 'em or leave 'em tips to share on how to get followers as an indie musician on TikTok. All right, here's his tip number 1. Lurk first. It's nearly impossible to succeed on TikTok without having a finger on the pulse of the community. For example, most of the popular sounds quickly acquire an established use and meaning among the users. The layering of this established meaning with an original twist is what makes TikTok unique, and it's what the users love best. Number 2, make illusions. If you spend enough time on TikTok, you'll start to realize the videos you find most hilarious don't translate well to friends and family who are not on the app. This is because TikTok is basically one big inside joke, and they like it that way. In your own videos, be sure to reference trends, use familiar audio, and make it clear you're a part of the community. Number 3, find your niche. As you lurk, you'll find that most popular creators have specific calling cards. Cute kids, cosplay, being old, pet lizards, sensuality, reenactments, teaching, etc. Pick a thing and stick with it for a few videos so TikTok can learn what kind of people like your content. Number 4, don't redirect. People on TikTok have a good nose for people who join the community just to promote their non-TikTok content. In general, avoid making videos that directly reference your music unless viewers will feel immediately inspired to do something with the tune on the app itself. Focus on making content that people will enjoy for its own sake, and then throw your website and Instagram profile into your bio and see what happens. Number 5, use hashtags wisely. People don't really search hashtags on TikTok. Instead, the algorithm uses your hashtags to show your video to other people who have engaged positively with similar hashtagged videos in the past. This makes it very important to be precise and limited in your use of hashtags, like you would be with targeted advertising. Number 6, don't waste your first video. There's one hashtag in particular which can be especially helpful, and it's hashtag first. People who have a history of engagement with this hashtag tend to be very supportive and welcoming toward new users, which is an advantage you don't want to miss out on. Take some time and plan out a clever video that incorporates trends and references your noobness, like being a newbie, and then slap a hashtag first on there and watch the nice people of TikTok pat you on the head. If you've already posted once or twice without much response, you can download those videos to your phone, delete them from TikTok, post your hashtag first video, and then re-upload those other videos again later. That's it for me. Feel free to hit me up on TikTok at A. Daniel Cooper. I'll just be over there throwing spaghetti at the wall and seeing what sticks. Cheers, Daniel. And he might actually be throwing spaghetti against the wall and seeing what sticks. That might be his TikTok thing.
I'm actually looking him up right now to see.
I thought that was a lot of great tips. A lot of great tips. The one that I should not be missed, since this whole episode, the things we talked about, things you might have missed. His number 1 was lurk first, but what he said after that Like most of the popular sounds quickly acquire established use and meaning among users. And like the layering of the established meaning with an original twist is what makes TikTok unique. I think that is something not to be missed. And that was one of the first things I picked up on, because when I downloaded the TikTok app and opened it up, everybody was doing their twist on like this one particular dance and the bippity boppity thing where they're look like all dressed all in their jammies, and then they jump and suddenly they're all dressed fancy to go out on the town, and like this transformation. Those were everywhere. And so it's like, okay, this is a thing, people doing their own versions of something that's become popular. And it's like he mentions, it's sort of an inside joke. And it's very clear if someone just jumps on TikTok and tries to use it like YouTube or like Instagram, and it doesn't translate. And vice versa, like what he said, some of the stuff you post on TikTok doesn't translate outside of that platform.
I agree. I'm just I'm kicking myself because I feel like I've got some videos where I've broke some of his rules.
They're really guidelines.
Yeah, no, they're all good though. And I mean, it's just so during this pandemic, I've just been consuming a whole lot of TikTok, and everything he said is very true. It all feels like one big inside joke, and it's probably worth waiting before you post anything until you kind of get the joke. And then I didn't even know about that first thing when I was posting, you know, my first videos to try and figure the app out when CD Baby was partnering. And I think I'm a little too far along now to take down like however many videos I have, and just for the hashtag win, but it's a good tip for sure.
Yeah. And the thing, like the hashtags, people aren't searching hashtags, but like thinking about who are the people you want to target. And that way you should not be hashtag stuffing, because that doesn't help. But it is very much algorithmically generated. And so that's what you gotta, when you use it. And like he's saying, when you lurk at first, you start understanding that it is a video social platform that has some rules of engagement. And so when you learn those rules and why people are there and why they think it's fun, and you play within those guidelines, then you're going to have more success. Mm-hmm. If you just take what you posted on Facebook and slap it on Instagram and slap it on TikTok, TikTok is going to most likely have the lowest level of performance. And Instagram and Facebook are going to be more relatable as far as how people engage with the content. All right.
Tip. So it's good to hear from someone who is getting traction, and then they kind of go in depth with their discoveries. Keep more of those kind of calls coming.
Yeah. We love those. Feel free to send them our way, and we'll let people know about them. So if you'd like to send a tip or some advice or something that's working for you that you're trying out now because you've had to stop touring or just because you've got time on your hands, you can call our listener line at 360-524-2209, or you can email us at podcast@cdbabypodcast.com. All right.
And tune into my 8-hour live stream.
Yeah. I'm going to have to tune in to see how you hold up.
Yeah, now that I've said that, what's the date going to be? Thursday, is it the 16th? Let me check.
Yeah, we'll have this podcast live in time.
All right, Thursday, April 16th from 11 a.m. to 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on Facebook, Chris Robley Music, on Twitter, Chris Robley, and on YouTube, which you can search Chris Robley. The handle's actually Cutthroat Pop. But yeah, it'll be on Facebook, YouTube, and Periscope/Twitter.
All right.
I've got my commercial in there for the day.
Let's all show up and see if he can hack it.
Yeah. Show up at least in the first 3 hours.
I'm going to show up at hour number 7 and just heckle you the whole time.
I'll be singing like this. My fingers will be bleeding. You know, I didn't even think of this till yesterday, but like all the hand washing and sanitizing I'm doing, my hands are not equipped to play the guitar for 8 hours.
Oh, so the excuses are already starting. I see.
Yeah, but I think that'll just make it more fun for people to tune in.
You've got a Rhodes. You can wheel that thing in and play that for some of the stuff.
That's true. Yeah, I could take little breaks. sing a cappella for an hour.
Yeah, there you go. You can do some poetry readings. As long as it's you live. It didn't say Chris is going to be singing every second of the hour, is it, or the 8 hours.
Yeah, that's true. Now, also, if I take breaks for the bathroom and eating, like, do I bring the camera with me? Do people want that that intimate experience? Is that?
Well, I'll let you decide that. Surprise us.
Yeah, all right. It'd be like, what's that woman on the Zoom call? Poor Lindsay or something?
Jennifer. Poor Jennifer. Such a good one. Oh, man. That's classic. See, people in 2019 wouldn't have understood that one. But generations from 2020 forward will now understand the Zoom humor. I had something happen in a meeting yesterday. Not me, but the person I was talking to. I won't share here, but I'll tell you afterwards.
Oh, all right. Can't wait.
Anyway, I think that brings us to the end of this episode.
All right. Well, and, see you next time.
All right. See ya.
Peace.
You've been listening to the CD Baby DIY Musician Podcast, broadcasting from Portland, Oregon, USA.